Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Kane Collects. Happy New Year to everybody. I hope you enjoyed your holidays. You know, I always say it, and I actually mean it when I say it, is if you can collect it, I will talk about it. I know I've been doing a lot of sports and trading card episodes recently, but I wanted to do an alcohol episode, and this one specifically whiskey bourbon. And like I said, I hope you enjoyed the holidays and everything, and maybe you overindulge in some whiskey or bourbon. And I know people do participate in Dry January, but I wanted to kick off the new year with this episode. And I wanted to bring on an expert and an enthusiast on something like this, which I am not. I enjoy whiskey, I enjoy bourbon, but I'm a novice. I don't know, I'm not an expert. I don't know all the ins and outs, so I wanted to bring somebody on that did. And the guest for this week's episode is going to be Trevor Deal. He's an executive bourbon steward, whiskey enthusiast. Trevor, thanks for joining me, man, on this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to ask you to speak to me and the audience like we're five. And when I say we're five, I mean 21, because we're able to drink and purchase alcohol. But as novice as I am, and I'm just going to assume a lot of my listeners are as well, I'm going to ask you, hopefully you can educate us on this, you know, and maybe become enthusiasts ourselves. I know you, Trevor, you have like 900 to 1,000 bottles, which sounds insane to me. I mean, you have them all in your house. Where do you have these bottles?
So I have a very forgiving fiance that has allowed me to convert our basement into a, let's call it a speakeasy. I have shelves around the entire basement, just floor to ceiling bottles. I have shelves behind the couch, the bar I'm sitting at, the walls. There's some in our storage room. I mean, they're kind of just everywhere.
And I mean, if I asked you right now to grab a certain bottle, you would know where it is?
Yes.
Do you? Yep. Is this on a laptop, a card catalog? Like, how do you, a binder somewhere? You just all in your head?
So as far as what I have, it's mostly in my head. There is an app called Only Drams that has kind of allowed me to catalog everything that I have. But if you told me, hey, go grab X, Y, or Z bottle, I within 30 seconds, I can have it in my hand.
That's awesome, man. So, I mean, how did you get into this? How did you start falling in love with then whiskey and bourbon? And first, you know, before you get to that, sorry, can you explain to our listeners what the difference is? When I hear whiskey and bourbon, like, explain to me what the difference was between the two and all that. And the rest of the whole class and all that stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. So all bourbon is whiskey, but not all whiskey is bourbon, is kind of the easiest way to think about it. So bourbon is a uniquely American spirit. Whiskey is a global spirit. It's sometimes spelled with the E or without the E. Rule of thumb is, depending on what country it's made in, if there's an E in the name of that country, then you use the E. If there's not, then you don't. So like America, we use the E. Canada, no E.
Wow.
Yeah. Bourbon has to be at least 51% corn in its mash bill. So predominantly corn. It has to be aged in new charred oak barrels, and it has to be distilled and aged here in the United States. Those are kind of the big ones. There's, if you look at the real legal document, there's a ton of other things, and I'm sure there's people that'll listen to this and tell me, oh, wait, you forgot these eight things. From a broad strokes perspective, those are the big ones. Because, Scotland, Ireland, those whiskeys are made from 100% malted barley. Okay. So the grains they use, it's just barley. I don't want to get too deep into any of the scientific stuff, but malting is where you heat up the barley a little bit, get it to sprout just a tad, and then you stop it and you get it colder. And that's what starts converting all the enzymes and everything into alcohol. You get consumes the sugars and produces alcohol. Indian whiskey, they actually probably produce more than any other country in the world, but theirs isn't really what we consider whiskey. It's not from a distilled grain. It's more from sugar, like a rum or something. But Canadian whiskey is obviously our neighbors to the north. There's a lot of times it's going to be 100% rye grain. They can use already used barrels, which a lot of times they'll buy our used barrels. And it's kind of got some stigmas to it, which aren't true. But that's kind of a broad strokes type thing. Scotches, Irish whiskeys, those can be aged a lot longer because of the used barrels. Bourbons, not so much. Ryes, and then we just recently added a new classification on December 18th. It was officially passed by the Tobacco and Trade Bureau, and it goes into effect later this month, actually. So American single malt whiskey is now its own legal defined class.
Oh, okay. So was it faux pas, or is it someone, if I referred to all of it as bourbon, or is it accepted, you know, like, hey,
America. I mean, if you refer to it as bourbon or whiskey, people will generally get the idea of what you're talking about. There are going to always be those people that are going to be offended. We usually refer to those people as jerks, you know, because it's really, there's people that are super uptight about it.
Yeah.
And they're like purists, and, you know, you're not allowed to put ice in your whiskey. You're not allowed to use mixers, stuff like that. And they want to be very, like, to the point, very precise. And I get roped into that category a lot just because it's like my thing. But it's really, I mean, it's kind of however you like to do it. If you want to refer to all whiskey as bourbon, people are going to get it. If you just want to refer to bourbon as whiskey, people are going to understand. You want to drink it how you want to drink it, do it. I mean, it's really kind of a enjoy at, you know, your own pace type deal.
Yeah, and I'm sure you have your preferences as well, but it sounds like you're open to letting everyone involved into this club. And there's different levels, of course, and, you know, different, how people are educated and what they know, different knowledge, you know, and all this. But people like to drink, and sometimes they don't really know what they're drinking, and some people do really know what they're drinking. So, you know, and I know you mentioned the ice and the mixers and things like that. Like I said, start this thing. Hey, I'm a complete novice. I've put ice, you know, to take the edge off a little bit, and some of my whiskey and bourbon. I've used mixers, but that's just the way I like to drink it. And I'm not drinking anything really high end where I don't think I'm insulting anybody, you know, by doing something like that. But
I mean, even if you are, if you spent your hard earned money on that, or if somebody offered you a pour, if you want some ice in it, because that's how you take it. I mean, I've had friends down here that, you know, I've offered them a $200 bottle, and they're like, yeah, can I get some ice? Because it's a little bit hot for me. Okay. I mean, if you're drinking it, I don't care. It's going to it's going to be gone anyway. So whatever's going to make that drinking experience better for you, that's what I want to see happen.
So these 900 to 1,000 bottles you have in your house or around you, like, how did you go, like, so when I talk about cards and collecting things, like, I'm like, oh, I don't have that. I want that. You know, things like, how does it go for you? Like, I mean, I'm sure you don't want all of it, but, you know, how do you go selecting and purchasing and what you decide to buy and bring into your home?
I spend a lot of time on Instagram, YouTube, various internet forums. It mostly comes from YouTube, but I am in some barrel clubs as well. I have a lot of different varieties because that really is, like, what makes whiskey and bourbon so unique is there's a million and one different combinations, and I want to try all of them. That's my, you know, my biggest downfall is I want to try every bit of it, from the big boys like the Buffalo Traces and the Wild Turkeys to the little guys like American Fifth and Lone Light, where they've got, you know, small column stills and they're just trying to get off the ground and get their brand out there. But everybody's got something unique and different to bring to the table. And it really is an art form, and everybody's got a different approach to their art. And I want to see and experience and taste all of it.
How expensive can some of these bottles get, man?
Oh, I mean, so if we're just talking bourbons, the most I've ever seen anybody pay is, me personally, I've seen somebody pay $5,000 for a bottle. I lied. $7,500 for a bottle. If you get into auction sites, some bourbons, $35,000. The big boys that spend a lot of money on collectible investment grade whiskeys, you're talking usually scotches, and that can be as much as six figures for a single bottle of whiskey. If you're looking to invest in it, you know, your entry bottle that you're buying on the shelf today is anywhere from $100 to $300, and you're going to stock that thing away. You're not drinking it. and you're waiting to come back 15, 20 years later and hope that that $150, $200 bottle that you just bought is now a super collectible allocated item that is now worth $10, $20, $30,000 because it was a one-year run or it was a special bottling or something along those lines.
What would cause that something to go up in value, a bottle of scotch or whiskey or bourbon? Like, I know you just mentioned one thing, like a limited run, right? Like, and is there any, like, what else would could help? What are some other factors that might do that?
I guess it's kind of like word of mouth and just kind of being the it bottle right now. Because I've seen bottles where they hit the market and they're the it bottle and they retail for $50, $60 and people are paying $500, $600, $700 for them, like, as soon as they hit the market. And then it gets the market and it becomes a little more available. And then reviews start coming out. People are like, oh, this really isn't that good. And then it cools very quickly. Or I've seen the other thing happen where people are really anticipating this and it's a $100 bottle. As soon as it hits the market, it's worth $500, $600 minimum. And then a year or two later, that particular batch is now going for $1,400, $2,000, $2,500. I mean, it all just depends on the distillery is the biggest part of it. Like bourbon, if you've got anything from Buffalo Trace that is even remotely allocated, you can sit on that and you're going to turn a profit. You know, you can double, triple your money, no problem. Jack Daniels is getting to be the same way. Scotches, you gotta wait a while. You know, you're going to be waiting 10, 20 years usually to make any kind of real money off of it.
More of like a long-term investment, like a long play, right?
Right. Yeah. But it's really, you know, hype is what drives demand a lot of times. And the other part of it is what people are willing to pay. If you're just looking to drink it, a lot of times store owners will be, they'll be cool with you. And like, you know, they got to work hard to get those bottles too. But if you give them their business or give them your business repeatedly, they're more inclined to, you know what, I know this guy's in here all the time. He buys a bottle a week from me. He's coming here for sodas, energy drinks. I'm going to hold back this bottle of Coy Hill or whatever, because I know that Trevor spends a lot of money with me. So I'm gonna hook him up because I know that that money is going to bring friends and a lot more friends than what that bottle would have gotten me.
So as soon as you open up a bottle, does it lose its value? Or
not all the way, but significantly. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's real hard because there are people that will try and sell like half empty bottles.
Okay, yeah.
And those can still bring some money. But I mean, if I try to sell you this bottle that otherwise unopened would be $1,500 and I say, hey, Kang, man, I got this bottle. It's half empty, $1,500. You're going to tell me to go kick rocks. You're going to say, or I could give you like $300 because that's probably what it's worth.
Yeah.
The other part of that is, I mean, so bourbon became a thing, right? Because a couple hundred years ago, farmers had all this corn. They didn't know what to do with it. You know, you lose a lot to spoilage. Turning it into whiskey was the way that you didn't lose it to spoilage, because whiskey will never go bad. As long as you keep it corked and you stop air from getting to it, it's not going to get funky. It's not going to get weird like beer or anything like that. Now, once you uncork it and you drink half the bottle and you let that oxygen in there, it will oxygenate. It will change. You start changing the flavor profile on a highly collectible bottle and people are not going to want it nearly as much.
Makes total sense. So kind of like with a lot of collectibles, scarcity and quality play a big role and factor into the value, right?
Absolutely, they do. Yeah. Yeah. Anything from Buffalo Trace right now is going to be pretty much unobtainium. You know, they're doing everything right. They can do no wrong. The Pappy Van Winkles, the Wellers, anytime they bring a new bottle to market, forget about it. They're going to be printing another $1 billion because everybody wants it. It's the hot item. There's usually only a finite quantity to go around. And you got guys that are literally following the delivery trucks from stop to stop. Wow. So that they can, it's bad. Or you have like, there have been some reports of like truck drivers where they'll kind of, you know, this case fell off the truck.
Like the card industry during like the post, like right after pandemic, people were following the guys that were, stocking the shelves at, you know, Walmart, Target, whatever, the trucks, like, and then they were selling backdoor deals to employees apparently, or other people that they knew. This is crazy. Yep.
Oh yeah, it's there was a really good video on Netflix did something called Heist, and it was a multi-part series. But the first part was about the Buffalo Trace Van Winkle heists, where people that worked at the distillery were breaking in after, I mean, not breaking in, they had keys, but they would go into the display cases and they're taking bottles of Pappy Van Winkle that would retail for $60, $70, $100 and selling them to these rich doctors for a couple hundred dollars a piece. And it kind of snowballed into now they're stealing cases. Then you got people, they're taking barrels and they're rolling barrels into the back of their trucks and hiding them in their backyard just to, you know, sell it and turn profit, make all this money. It's actually a really, really good story about a dude who, the guy who went to prison for it was not the only one involved. And yeah, he definitely got hosed. But it's a really cool story. It kind of gives you an idea how fanatical people will get about their whiskey. People will camp out overnight just for the chance, not even the promise, the chance to purchase a highly allocated bottle. You know, wow. I've never done it, but wow, I've waited a couple hours in line before.
Yeah, to try to get something that's just hard to get, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's crazy. I mean, you know, in the end, like when people want something or it's valuable, I mean, it's kind of all turns into the same thing. I mean, because you mentioned something earlier, hype. Hype drives a lot of things in sports and the card market. It seems like it's not, you know, it's kind of similar with your market as well. So, mm-hmm. I mean, is there something where you're like, in your opinion, you know, Trevor's opinion, like, hey, this isn't that good, but everybody wants it, so it makes it worth more or whatever, right? Or maybe the other way around, where like, hey, why is no one on this? This is actually high quality stuff, but it's not worth as much.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many micro distilleries or craft distilleries out there that are putting out just beautiful bottles of whiskey that are absolutely amazing. There's a place in Lansing. It's called American Fifth, little hole in the wall place across the street from the ballpark in downtown Lansing. And they put out absolutely awesome stuff that, you know, they don't have a whole lot of hype. They don't have a whole lot of recognition, but their stuff is really good. The flip side of that is Weller 12, right? It's supposed to be a $45 bottle. You will be hard pressed to find it for less than $200 anywhere. And it is absolute sink water. It is, I waited for 4.5 years to find a bottle at retail. Yeah. And I never found it. I did pay a little over retail. So I think it retails for like $45 or $50, and I think I paid $78.99 for it. Uh-huh. So a little bit more. And I was super excited. I'm like, yeah, this is gonna be great. You know, I know it's only 90 proof, but you know, this is gonna be great. And I tried it, and I don't know if I've ever been more disappointed in anything in my life, including the Lions, than I was in that particular point. It was thin, it was light, it had no finish. Like, there was just, it was like if you were to take a Werther's and soak it in a glass of water for a few days.
And you're like, people are paying $200 for this?
At one point, people were paying $400 a bottle for that. Wow. During COVID, when the bourbon bubble was kind of like at that peak, people were paying $350, $400 a bottle for this stuff. And, you know, the guys who knew were like, dude, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a friend who chases all those hyped up bottles. And then he gets them. He's like, man, you didn't tell me this wasn't any good. Like, no, I absolutely told you it wasn't any good. You just chose not to listen. Like, you wanted the sexy bottle because, you know, you post the pictures in the barrel club and you want all the guys in the group will get tight in the pants over it. But when it comes down to drinking it, it's just not that good. You know, it's just not. There's $20 and $30 bottles that you can go out and you could probably throw a rock out the window and hit three liquor stores right now that are going to have 8 to 10 bottles on the shelf that are better than that super hyped one. And that's just the reality of it. That's the game that we play.
Yeah. And so like with you though, like let's say you want to try it, you know, and if you can't find anybody who actually has it, like a friend or somebody, I mean, you're going to have to get it yourself, buy it yourself, and then try it yourself. Like with other things, right, you know, you don't have like you can say like, hey, I don't want to buy a Wembanyama card because I think, you know, he's not good. But eventually that might play out, like his career might not be that good, or whoever, pick any player, you know, in any sport. But with the whiskey or bourbon, like you physically are gonna have to try it to see if you even like it or not. And so, I mean,
yes, because taste is very subjective. Yep. You know, a lot of like whiskey snobs out there want to tell you, like, if I were trying to introduce you to bourbon, right, I'm going to give you something a little bit lower proof and I'm just going to say, here, drink it. And there's a way to drink whiskey without taking your head off or lighting your hair on fire. Cause everybody thinks like, oh my God, he drinks so much whiskey. Like, how does he do it? There is a right and wrong way to do it so that you don't get that burn.
Yeah.
But what I taste and what you taste are going to be two, they might be the same thing, or they could be two completely different things. But if we go to a bar together and we each get a pour of Elmer Tea Lee or something, I might taste caramel and chocolate, maybe like some dulce de leche or whatever. And you might look at me and be like, man, that's weird, because I get like blueberries and butterscotch.
Yeah.
And as a enthusiast and somebody who really values the drinking experience, I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's awesome. And then I'm going to try and find it. Other guys are going to be like, wow, you're stupid. That's definitely not in that glass. Like, that's not what you're tasting. Like, that's what most doctors refer to as a jerk, because they want to tell you what you're experiencing instead of, you know, what you're experiencing. Like, not everybody likes Brussels sprouts. Not everybody likes, you know. So the way we interpret different things, and it's like, I'm one of those people that has the cilantro gene, right?
I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't do cilantro. It tastes like absolute soap to me. It's and I'm Mexican. So like, that is horrific at family functions, because I got to like scrape it off the top. But everybody else loves cilantro. I'm one of like the 3% of people that just, they can't do it. So I have a more unique palate and how my palate interprets flavors. But that doesn't make it wrong. Like, that's just me.
I was just going to ask you that. And I was going to bring up the cilantro thing, by the way. For people that don't know, some people, and Trevor apparently is one of them, when they eat cilantro or try cilantro, it tastes like soap to them. And for most of us, the rest of us, it doesn't. I don't know what he's talking about. I love cilantro personally. I don't yet, but I've heard this many times. I know about it. And I was going to bring that up to you. And then also, does that affect, you think, your how you taste bourbon, you know, and whiskey? Or do you think that just that's just cilantro? Everything else were the same? Like,
So it does a little bit. And I found that it's a little bit more challenging, or it was more challenging for me to develop my palate. Cause like my fiance, and actually most women are going to always be better at tasting whiskey than guys, just because of like genetic evolution over like years and years and years. Women over time, and this is not a sexist comment, this is scientific, I promise. Over the generations, they've spent a lot more time in kitchens cooking, baking. They often use a lot more fragrances, perfumes, so their olfactories have developed more than men have, just by circumstance. So I remember, and this was 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I had just started dating my fiance, and I was like, oh my God, I found this bottle, you know, and it's so good. I'm getting like this chocolatey note and like some caramel and vanilla, which are your most basic bourbon notes. And she's like, oh, okay, here, let me try it. And she's like picking out, oh, this smells like roasted espresso bean. And I'm getting like, there's like a vanilla cheesecake here, because it's not like quite as aggressive. And I just remember staring a hole through her. I'm like, I hate you so much, because I have spent hours, like, you know, people ask like how often I drink, and it's usually like 5 days a week, but I mean, we're talking, you know, 1 ounce pours, and I can make that last an hour and a half, 2 hours, while I'm trying to dissect it and break it down. And I've spent hours doing nosings and trying to learn how to pick this stuff out. She does not spend that time. She just grabbed this glass and just busted out like these super dynamic tasting notes. Yeah. Like, it was a horrible gut punch, but I mean, and that's getting a developed palate is like years of work. And actually, to become a steward, you have to buy this like $400 nosing kit, where there's like chemicals that have scents in them. And it's definitely a marathon. It's not a sprint, you know?
Yeah. So how do you, like, I bet you people are asking themselves right now, like, everyone's heard of like beer flights, you know, and wine tasting and all that stuff. How can you do this without getting completely hammered? You said there's a technique and things like that. Do you spit out whiskey? Do you only drink, hey, I only can have this many pours? Like, you know what I mean? How does that go about when you're trying to taste a bunch of different whiskey and bourbon?
So a lot of times, because no bar wants that liability.
Yeah, right.
If you do a flight, you're getting like a half ounce pour of everything.
Yeah. You gotta smell.
Yes. Because the state of Michigan actually has a law for the amount of pure alcohol they're allowed to serve you in a given drink. And I believe it's either 2.5 or 3 ounces for the state of Michigan. Every state's a little bit different. But like, I went to Motor City Gas a couple weeks ago. It's a local craft distillery in Royal Oak. And they released 5 new bottles. So there were 5 Glencairn glasses, which are like, this is a Glencairn. It's a tulip shaped glass that helps to focus the aromas. But yeah, there was like just a half ounce in the bottom of each one of them. In terms of not getting wasted, you just got to kind of meter yourself. Everybody's gonna be a little bit different. I'm a big guy, so yeah. I can take a lot, and I've been drinking a lot for a long time, so I have a bit of a tolerance built up. But as far as tasting it so that you don't blow your stack like right off the top, the technique I always recommend to people is you need to get your palate acclimated to the alcohols and the ethanols and the phenols and everything that's in your whiskey. So that first sip, if you have a glass of whiskey, is just going to be like that first sip of hot coffee. You know, like you're just kind of testing to see how hot it is. You want to sip just enough where you can get it into your mouth and kind of roll it around your mouth so it barely covers your tongue and the walls of your mouth. And there just maybe there's like a drop left for you to swallow. You're not trying to taste anything. But what you're doing is you're getting your taste buds acclimated. And what you're doing is you're partially anesthetizing them to the alcohol so that it's not as like aggressive on your palate. But then what I usually tell people is take a nice deep breath in afterwards, get that oxygen flowing over your palate, and then you're ready to taste. And it's done in sips. If it's still too hot, adding a block of ice or some ice cubes is not a bad thing, because as you lower proof, you're going to pull out more of those subtle, subdued notes. So if you're, all I can taste is like cinnamon and gasoline, that's all I got. Okay, well then put some ice cubes in it. Let it melt down just a little bit. You don't want to water it down completely, because then you're going to ruin it and not be able to get anything. But if your goal is to taste it, throw one ice cube in there, just a normal, it doesn't have to be distilled water or anything crazy, just one ice cube, let it sit for 1 to 2 minutes, and then try it again, because every drop of water will lower the alcohol content down. So as it melts, you're effectively dropping the ABV in that glass.
Is it completely frowned upon to like spit it out? Can you get the taste and all that stuff? I've heard that in like wine, you know.
So if you're doing like a mass tasting, like Fred Minnick is a really prominent figure in the whiskey community, and he just did his Ascot Awards, because he wears the neckerchief thing, and he tastes 100 whiskeys in one setting.
Come on.
Or one sitting. There's no way he could do it without either passing out or dying or both. So he definitely has a bucket next to him. He'll do the sip, and then he's spitting in the bucket, and then you're rinsing with water and gargling to try and clean your palate off. But there's, if you're doing a flight, like I've never been able to do more than one flight in a sitting. And that's if I'm driving, I might not even do that. If I'm driving, that one palate or one flight, that's all I'm doing. But if I know I'm not driving, I'm good for 5 or 6. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, because you're just trying to get flavor. You're not trying to get, like, you know, buzzed up or anything like that. Like, if we're doing 100, you know, different tastings or whatever that guy, you know, he was doing, that's insane.
Yeah, I'm looking for a drinking experience. I'm looking for tasting notes and enjoyment. I'm not looking for the intoxication is a byproduct of what I do. It's it's not the end result goal that I have. Right. I want to know, like, what it's about. What does it taste like? I want to see if I can pick it apart or, you know, find all the nuances that are in it. You know, that's what I go there for.
Are empty bottles worth anything? You know, like just like the design, I don't know, what obviously it depends on what was in it as well, but can those be valuable collectibles, empty bottles?
There are people that collect empty bottles. Some of the allocated stuff, it is frowned upon to try and sell them, because what'll happen is you do have people that are making counterfeit whiskeys. There was actually a wine shop in New York. It's like one of the most prominent wine shops in the whole US. And they got caught selling a counterfeit bottle of E.H. Taylor for like $5,800. So for some of these super rare bottles, they've actually started putting like microchips in like the bottleneck strips and everything, so they can prove if it's real or not. Now, if it's just a normal bottle of Wild Turkey 101, that's $25 and a dime a dozen.
Yeah.
Throw it in the recycling bin, or like sometimes I'll repurpose them into a lamp or like a vase or something for around here. I actually, the cleaner for the speakeasy is an old whiskey bottle.
Oh, that's that I just sweet. Yeah.
You know, like just stuff like that. I'll repurpose them when I can, but most of the time empty bottles are really valuable to the people who emptied them. Like I've got one or two sitting around here that, I keep. They're empty. They've been empty for a long time, but I keep them because of the symbolism and the significance to me personally. Anybody else is going to be like, yeah, no, that just looks like 10 cents worth of glass to me. Like, go ahead and get rid of it.
So there's like no real market, and it's kind of can be frowned upon, especially with like people just, you know, like, you said, putting fake stuff in there or imitating, the real thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's people that'll like cut bottles in half and make glasses or put candles in them and stuff. So people repurpose them. In terms of any kind of real profit, though, I mean, for me, it's not worth the headache and the hassle. I would just, if I knew somebody who needed them, I would just throw them all in a box and like once a quarter, just drop them off at the house, be like, here you go, have a ball. I don't care. I keep the corks just so I have extras if they break, but the bottles themselves, I have no interest in for the most part.
Now you just got me thinking of something, though. Like, is there any concern when you go to a restaurant, bar, whatever, like, and you're ordering some expensive pour from an expensive bottle, that that's not what they say it is? You know what I mean? Like, a while back, this is different because it was Mexico, but I don't know if you remember that story. They apparently were refilling old liquor bottles, it's, tequila or whatever, with lower-end tequila, and selling it or give, part of the all-inclusive resort, but everyone's getting cheap whiskey when it's, that's not the real deal. It's counterfeit. Like, do you ever, does that ever cross your mind? Is that an issue in your market or, can they combat this?
Yes, that's always a concern. I don't really have it too much anymore because I always visit places that I know and trust, like Butter Run Saloon, shameless plug for them, right? They're, I think, like 3 years in a row, the number one whiskey bar in Michigan. And I mean, this place is a dive for sure, but they have probably 1,500 bottles of whiskey behind that bar, anything you can think of. Most whiskey bars worth their salt, if you're ordering a high-end pour, and the bartender will know if it's a high-end pour, they're going to take your glass empty and set it in front of you, and they're going to pour it in front of you, and then they'll set the bottle down for your inspection, like, before you taste it or anything like that. If you have concerns about whether or not that place is actually serving you that, you can, if you know what you're looking for, you can inspect the bottle. Or if you've had it before and you know what to expect and it doesn't taste like that, I don't really have any advice for anybody because I've never been in that position. But I mean, if I were to go to, because I've been to Kentucky a few times, right? If I were to walk into one of those bars down there, and that would be a place I could see where that might happen, right? Because everybody goes to Kentucky because they want the Pappy Van Winkles. They want the ultra-exclusive whiskeys and bourbons. And something like that, I would be real hesitant to go drop $150 on a one-ounce pour of Van Winkle 20 or Van Winkle 23 because, A, I've never tasted either one of those, so I have no basis for comparison. And B, usually when I'm down there, I've already been drinking for that day, which means my judgment's going to be impaired, and I'm not going to be, as cautious as I normally would. Yeah. That and everything down in Kentucky is way more expensive when it comes to whiskey, because that's like Graceland. But it's definitely something to be worried about. Usually you want to, if you're going to spend big money on a pour, have somebody with you who kind of knows like what's up, or work your way up to it. Yeah. Because I've got a coworker who is slowly getting into whiskeys, and the last time he was over, he's like, give me the best bottle you got. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I reached under the bar and I grabbed, I mean, it had to be like a $38 bottle. It was just something that was there. And I poured it for him. He's like, oh God, that was really good. He's like, that stuff's $250 a bottle. I'm like, oh yeah. I waited for him to finish his drink. I'm like, so I'm going to tell you, I lied. This is what you were drinking and you thought it was amazing. So you could have just saved yourself $200.
Yeah.
You know, and until you, and I'm not going to tell people not to go out and buy what they want to drink, but you don't, until you can appreciate it.
Yes. Don't do it.
Sometimes you're throwing your money away. Now, if you want that bottle and you're just going to stare at it until you can appreciate it, hey, I'm down for that too. Especially
if you just drink Jameson.
I mean, it's 80 proof Irish whiskey, that is $20 a fifth, but and Irish whiskey is great stuff. It is. If that's your jam and you like that malty, white, fruity, tropical fruit kind of profile, Irish whiskey is absolutely fantastic. I got at least a few bottles sitting out here, but it's your flavor palette. Like that's the first, one of the first questions I ask somebody is, I don't really drink whiskey. What do you recommend? And I'm like, that's such a loaded question. Like if you're drinking a cocktail, do you want fruity? Do you want sweet? Do you want savory? Like, or if you're having a dessert even, like what do you like? And if they want caramels or chocolates or butterscotch, or maybe if I know that they're a smoker, like they like cigars, like that's going to impact it. It's really super subjective because, I mean, there's bottles that I absolutely love that I think are amazing. And I've got buddies that are in my barrel club and they're like, no, it's absolute hogwash. Can't stomach it. It's too sweet or it's not sweet enough. I mean, it's so subjective. Everybody's got their own palate and profile. It's just kind of finding out where yours is. When I started collecting, once every 2 weeks on payday, I would go to the liquor store and I set myself a limit for $40. I'm not buying a bottle that's more than $40. And that was what kind of helped me identify what my palate is. And for years, that was how I played it. And it wasn't until years later that I got my stewardship and started really exploring global whiskeys that I was able to appreciate some of the other styles of whiskey that I had previously regarded as like trash or garbage, yeah, yeah. Whatever, you know?
Well, I'm glad you answered that because that was going to be one of my questions. And you're right, it is a loaded question because you don't know everyone's palate and everyone's taste. But yeah. I guess it sounds like, though, your advice might be, though, start low and educate yes. yourself on what you like. You know what I mean? Whatever. Yeah, so mm-hmm. that'd be your advice, it sounds like.
And I mean, yeah, and there's so much information available nowadays. Go on YouTube. I mean, you can look at my channel if you want. I tend to gravitate towards a lot of the smaller craft people. But you can find
YouTube channel, by the way.
Oh, it's T-Rod Whiskey, which is I caught that nickname T-Rod in high school over mm-hmm. something really stupid and mildly racist. And that just, it kind of stuck throughout the years and I got really into whiskey and okay, cool. So yeah,
T-Rod Whiskey.
Yep.
And, wait, is that with the E or without the E? Are we, with we're in America
E.
or what?
Well, yep, we're in the US, so I use the E. Right. Yeah, it's really easy now to get tasting notes and reviews. And even though it's not going to give you exactly your chances of you pulling out every flavor that professional reviewers and tasters have is, I mean, minuscule, right? You got a better chance of scoring 5 touchdowns in a game, but it will give you an idea at least of what that is about. You know, if it's really rye forward and maybe like my twin brother does not like rye. He finds it super off-putting. All he can taste is rye bread, won't touch the stuff. But give him a smoky peated scotch that tastes like you're drinking out of an ashtray and he's intrigued. He likes it. That earthy like smoked oak flavor, that's his jam, that's what he likes. But just looking at one versus the other, there's nothing that's going to tell you what it tastes like. So I usually just, you know, tell people, look, do your research, do your homework. Information is free. YouTube is a great resource. Go on there and see what some of the big guys have to say. Check out, you know, the Bourbon Junkies or SLB Drinks or any of these guys. I mean, just put in the search bar, 1792 small batch, let's say, and somebody's going to have talked about it and reviewed it and tell you what it tastes like to them. And maybe that sounds like something you want to try. Maybe it doesn't, but it'll save you money in the long run. The worst thing you can do is just go out and blindly buy bottles.
That's what I was, you know, yeah. And then we were just got done talking about, like, you know, how do you trust an establishment? They're giving you what you're ordering. Like, if you don't know what you're doing, like myself, like I should not go to some place, especially Kentucky, where they probably, there's some places, and I don't know this for a fact or anything, but that probably prey on tourists that don't know what doing. And they want to go down there and be like, hey, Trevor, guess what? I went to this place in Kentucky and I got a $250 pour. I don't even know what the heck I was looking for necessarily, but that I just wanted to know what $250 tasted like. But it could have been a $50 pour for all I know. You know what I mean? So
or $8. I mean, yeah. I've had some $3 pours that I enjoyed, you know, really, really well, just because maybe it was the special of the day or $8, $10. I mean, when I go out for dinner, if I'm getting a neat pour of something, because I haven't drank whiskey any other way than neat, unless I'm in the mood for a cocktail, usually I drink it neat. My average pour costs between $10 and $14. I hate paying inflated prices for, it's one of my bugaboos. Like, I know that this is a $45 bottle, but because it's special and it's allocated, I got to pay $38 for 1 ounce. I have a hard time swallowing that pill, you know, it's especially because I know if I really looked hard enough or talked to the right people, I could probably find the bottle for a reasonable price. I just don't care to. But I mean, if you're going to go out and you want to try like really good whiskey, your best bet is find a buddy who's already into it, take them with you, because they will protect you and your wallet, and they will stop you from making poor life decisions that you will regret. Because I know a guy that went to a bar in Vegas and he spent almost $1,000 on pours in one night because he wanted to try what he deemed to be the best. Mm-hmm. And that is just nobody's best is universal, right? It's all like the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, definitely. And talk about, yeah, speaking of taking advantage of tourists, Vegas, man, my God. But I will say one thing, at least you're probably most likely gonna get what they're serving you, but the prices might be completely inflated though. That's the issue.
Vegas is usually pretty good on the integrity end of things, but the price, I
Yes.
mean, yeah, you're going to be paying top end for whatever it is that you're drinking. I have not gone bourbon hunting or whiskey hunting in Vegas just because weight limits on bags suck. And like, I'm usually balling on a budget when I'm out there, or the last time I was out there anyways. I'm looking to have a good time on vacation. I had some cheap pours, but I didn't go looking for bottles to bring home because anything you find out there is going to be 3 to 4 times SRP at minimum.
So, like, are you like me? So, I collect a lot of cards, and people know this. If I'm out of town, just out of state, wherever, I look for a card shop. Like, I can't wait. I'll go hunting or whatever. You know, it's just something fun for me to do. It's what I like. Do you do the same thing with bourbon and whiskey when you're out of town on vacation, whatever?
110%. We take a trip to, I got a 7-year-old. We go to Toledo for the Science Center down there because it's interactive and it's a fun day trip. Fun fact about Ohio is it's state controlled pricing, so they have to charge you SRP. So I'm like, hey, we're going to Ohio. We're gonna hit like 3 or 4 stores while we're down there, right? And I usually know the good ones that are worth hitting because they'll have the OHLQ, which is the Ohio Liquor Commission. They'll have their single barrel picks, and they'll have a good variety of things that are sold in Ohio, but not in Michigan. And I know where I'm going and what I'm gonna end up paying usually. So yes, anytime out of town, Kentucky. I think my biggest Kentucky haul, I brought back like 41 bottles on one trip. We've been to Ohio a bunch of times. Anytime we travel to mid Michigan or just anywhere, Canada is a big one because we're so close to the border. I will hop across to Canada probably 6 times a year because our dollar goes further, and there's a lot of international export bottles, those duty frees, that you can't buy anywhere else. And that gets me a lot of internet cred with the fanboys. So
Nice.
yeah.
Well, yeah, the other thing I was gonna ask you is like, is there a difference between like the mom and pop shops and like the corporate, like, you know, Meijer or whatever, you know, Kroger or whatever? Like, is like, what do you suggest? You know, I mean, and is there a difference? And what, who, you probably know who gets what for the most part, but where's the best place to go looking for stuff like this?
So kind of everywhere is the short answer. Meijer and Kroger will, or your local grocery stores, actually get a pretty good selection. If you're just starting out, that's what I recommend because they're going to charge state minimum. And they do still get some good stuff. They get the Blantons, the round bottle with the gold horse that everybody's always chasing. They'll get some Eagle Rare and things like that. But that's where I usually tell people to start. If you're looking to step your game up, that's when I tell you to find a local neighborhood of liquor store that has a good whiskey selection. Make friends with the owner. Get some FaceTime in front of him. Make sure he knows you, he knows your name. And when you need to go out, run out for a gallon of milk, or you want to go get a Monster, or you need to go pick up a 6-pack for a barbecue, keep going to that store because those store owners are going to remember you. And then once you get to know them, they're going to take care of you. The guy at the end of my street, his name is Mark. He owns the Shores Canteen. Mark takes care of me several times a year because I'm in there probably 6 days a week. I'm either getting candy for my son, or I'm getting milk for the house, or pop, or I'm in there looking for a bottle because it's payday, you know. But I try to return the favor. If I know something just got approved for distribution in the state of Michigan and I know it's going to be popular, I'm like, hey, dude, this just hit the distribution list. Like, and he's called me a couple of times because we've exchanged numbers. And he's like, what the heck did you have me order? This case went out on the shelf an hour ago and there's one left. Like, yeah, I told you this was going to be a seller. So I tried to, give back or whatever and send business back to him. But in exchange, I see that he posts a bottle on the Facebook page. I will message him right away. I'm like, dude, can you hold that for me? I don't get off work till whatever time, and then I'll be there. Yep, no problem. And usually I pay MSRP. He might charge me $5 or $10 over SRP, but I'm okay with that because, I mean, for these guys to get those expensive allocated bottles, and everybody wants to rip on store owners because they gouge people. It's like if you wanted like a Jordan rookie card, right? What for me to give you as a distributor that one singular card, here, you got to sell 50 cases of the starter packs just for that one card. It's the same thing with whiskey. Those bottles that everybody wants, they get 3, maybe 6 of that bottle, but they also then have to buy 25 cases of Fireball or 99 bananas or whatever, just things that people drink them, but I mean, yeah, it takes a long time to move 25 cases of Fireball.
Yeah.
And that's the downside to it. That's why store owners, obviously they crank prices up because they know they can get it, but it's very hard for them to get those bottles. Uh-huh. So I have a hard time to be begrudging anybody for trying to make a few extra dollars, but when it gets out of hand, that's when I'll just usually walk out.
Is there an end goal for collecting for you at all, or is this thing endless? You're gonna end up with a million bottles one day, or like, you know, would you trade all your collection for a couple of bottles? Like, well, what's your goal here?
My goal is just kind of, I mean, I enjoy whiskey. Yeah. My friends enjoy whiskey. I have definitely tempered my buying and my selection process for bottles, because it was at a point where it was like, I was just buying a ton, right? And space is finite. And it gets to the point where you want to drink the really good stuff, especially since, you know, the older I get, my budget has kind of gone up a little bit. So instead of playing in the 40 and under range, I'm a little bit more comfortable around that $100 range. So now I'm more selective about what I buy. I buy a lot of single barrel picks. So that's where like a store will buy an entire barrel's worth of Old Pepper or Jack Daniels because they got a sample and they liked how that one specific barrel tastes. Well, if I really like Old Pepper single barrel rye, and I do, it's one of my favorites, every time I see a store pick of those, I grab it up. It's coming home with me because I know I'm going to like it. And it's going to be roughly the same profile, but there's going to be a lot of nuanced differences from barrel to barrel, especially if the age statements are different. So now it's kind of, you know, I'm a little bit more selective. Unless if I head out of state, all bets are off. If I'm in Kentucky or Tennessee and it's stuff that I can't normally get, I'm gonna make some poor life decisions.
Not necessarily even, it's just because, like, it's if I see a card or a collectible or whatever, like, I don't, that I know I'm not gonna maybe see for a while or ever, like, now's the time then, you know what I mean? So it's kind of opportunity and what's available. So then that's when you know, you strike. But if something, you know, like, hey, I'll see this again, or I might not have to buy it right there and then.
Exactly. Cause I'm that person where, like, I'll hem and haw, and usually my fiance's in the store with me and she sees me like, and I can't figure out which one I want to buy. She's like, are you going to see either of these again at this price, like, relatively soon? And I'm like, probably not. She's like, just buy them both, because you're going to kick yourself later if you don't do that. But, you know, then the other conversation happens a lot where it's like, you have an awful lot.
Yeah.
Right. You need, you know, and she's great. She doesn't give me flack about my buying problem, you know, but she does help be a sounding board a lot of times when I can't figure out if I want to buy it or not.
Awesome, man. Well, you know, I feel like I could talk about this forever. We'll have you on again. How about that, man?
No, it sounds great. I'd be happy to. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, like I said earlier, I know some people participate in Dry January, but hopefully we got you some ideas as soon as January's over. And for those that don't, hopefully you got some ideas on how to dive into the whiskey bourbon world. Trevor, can you plug your YouTube and your Instagram one more time before we go, man?
Yes, absolutely. It's T Rod Whiskey. So T period Rod Whiskey on YouTube and Instagram. Come on over by the page and you know, like, comment, subscribe, all that jazz. Would love to hear from anybody who's listening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you can always reach out and ask me questions through those social medias. And, you know, Trevor, I'm going to be subscribed as well and try to, you know, educate myself on what I like. Because right now, like I said, a pure novice, I'll be drinking Jameson ginger ale for all that matters to me, man. I don't care. But I enjoy that taste, though. I mean, but I don't know what my profile is yet. And hopefully I can figure that out in 2025 here.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Thanks, Trevor. Guys, and as always, thanks for listening. You know the drill. You can find us on Odyssey, of course, for free, and wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Amazon, Google Play, all that good stuff. And as always, you know, if you can collect it, I'll talk about it just like right now. And keep collecting.